Today's workshop is Social Media and Internet Addiction, the Quest for Identity in the Virtual World. Speaker is Pastor Tim Tang. Pastor Tim Tang has been serving as the English pastor at East Toronto Chinese Baptist Church for over 10 years. He has been involved with worship ministry, leadership training ministry, and mentorship.
In case you're wondering, the topic that we're going to talk about tonight is social media and internet addiction with teenagers. I've been ministering for 10 years officially as a pastor, but I've been working with youth for probably about 20 years now. Believe it or not, I'm 40 this year. I still feel like I'm about 21, so you know, I don't know if you guys feel like that too, but I'll always remember working with youth years and years ago, and this is at the beginning. I didn't think I was being a pastor at that time. I was just working with youth and just helping out at the time. And, you know, we had, at that point, you're right, it was just about gaming. And it wasn't, you know, social media wasn't really a big thing at the time. Kids were playing games, but, you know, we paid attention to it a little bit. And, you know, some kids we were concerned a little bit about, but we weren't really sure what to do at the time. But I remember one specific summer, and I had actually gone on vacation. And so I was away from the church a bit, and I was away from the youth group. But I'd gotten a call while on vacation that one of our youth had committed suicide. And when I thought about that young person, I'm not going to talk about who he is exactly, but we had been working with that youth for probably over a year with different things, trying to connect with him, trying to work with him. And for him, it really was a situation where he lost track of what was real and what was virtual. He was playing online games in an online game where he was completely entered into, and he lost track of time. He lost track of school, dropped out of school, dropped out of the family, basically, but the family obviously didn't know how to support, tried to support him. But, I mean, for me, that was a real wake-up call that the internet, whether it's gaming or other ways, can have powerful impacts on our young people. Not all bad. I don't want to just say, sit here and say, turn off the Wi-Fi, cancel your Rogers cable, you know, turn off your phones, collect all your phones later on, and you guys are all sinful too. But at the very least, we have to wake up to it as a church. We have to wake up to the reality that these are things that impact our young people in huge ways. And it wasn't the game that killed him. I don't want to say that at all. And obviously, a bunch of things that we'll talk about a little bit later had to do with it. But the internet is here to stay, number one. And it impacts all of our lives already. And it impacts our young people's lives. I do know that, you know, now that I don't always work with youth, I feel like I'm old and out of touch, to be very honest. So I actually brought Pastor Gannett, as Patty described earlier. Pastor Gannett works with our youth at our church. She actually had been instrumental for years helping to run the AFC Teens Conference. So she's been in touch with youth before me, I think, and still continues to be on board with youth way beyond me. So I've invited her to come. And she's going to share a little bit about what's going on out there right now. Because what I find is that social media and all the things that teens are on and connected with these days is constantly changing. Every year it's different. The things that we thought were big have changed. And I'm not sure what your experience is, so I think she's going to give us a little bit of a journey through the different things. And then afterward we're going to have Emily. I'm just joking. I'm just making fun of Emily. Yeah, I really thought about having a teenager just share, because they're probably more current than any of us, right? But I apologize. So we're going to have Janet, and she's going to share a little bit about the things that are going on and what she's seeing, not just in our church, but the things that she's observing around today with teens.
Okay, Tim. So I think most of us, like, back in the days, as a teenager in our years, 80s, I could say, in the 80s, we were teenagers. What we come out is like ICQ and MSN messengers. It's what we only use. It's the only things that we have. Or like a certain like emails, connections with other people, especially as like myself, I was like a visa student here. As a visa student, we connect with friends, relatives from Hong Kong or overseas. But like, but nowadays, most of these kids, your girls, your boys, they don't really need to connect to overseas people, but they are connecting with their friends here on Earth, just next door, maybe, just to their brother and sister in the same household. They are using the internet to connect to each other. That's why I want to give you an overview of what's on the right now. The social networking site, Facebook. I think most of you know Facebook is very huge. It's been here for like 2004, since 2004 until now, it's almost 10 years, but it's expand like tremendously. From one half a school student, they just developed a site for their only internal school usage to now how many billions of people are using it. But I'm honestly telling you, your teenagers are not on Facebook. They're not on Facebook checking their status, posting anything most of the time, because this is kind of like old already for them. It's only for us to connect to old friends that's like not on any other medium. Brock, mini Michael Brock. Tumblr and also Twitter. Tumblr is kind of like an internet diary. We write diary in the book. We put a lock in it. Don't want anyone to see. Don't like to share, even with my brother or sister, or especially our parents, we don't want to share. But nowadays, teenagers, they want to share everything. Anything. They don't have the boundaries yet. Tim will talk about that later. The Tumblr is like, since 2007 to present, a lot of teenagers are on it. They try to link up to a lot of their friends' blogs as well, and blog is called weblog, weblog, it's called blog. So it's kind of like the web terms. They put everything on it. And Twitter is 140 characters that you can do mini blogs, and it's very convenient for them to express their feelings, say stuff that they would like to say, very short, very precise. Next thing is video and photo messaging. I don't know how many of your kids have a smartphone. I guess all of them nowadays, they are not asking for a free phone. They are not asking for the phone that only you can call them. They want something that they can take pictures, they can take videos, they can go online, do whatever they want. But Instagram is another thing that they are really into. It's taking pictures, they don't need to say anything, just pictures. They post it up, people can tag your friends, comments on it. And another thing that we really want to watch out is the Snapchat. Snapchat is something that they just take pictures and share with the world, and not just their friends. Content community, there's another thing is YouTube. There's a lot of people trying to take videos, post up on the internet, whatever. You can search anything on YouTube. Worship songs, I would say. Many of us kind of like, we don't have the technology, sometimes we don't want to bring the whole music band worship team to a conference. We use YouTube. You just do the worship search and then there's like worship song. Mind you that. See if it is copyright or not though. Game. Virtual game world. I don't know how many of you heard of the term fantasy world. It is like all the games here is like multiplayer role play games. They are virtual. They don't play with their friends. They play with all the people online, everywhere. If you're from Hong Kong, you probably know there's a game called Sandbox something. They sell like knives, sharp tools and everything. They exchange it to actual things that can kill people, I would say. At least hurt, not killing, but those are like for 20 plus people. All the 20 plus older people, because these games, they need to pay to go on to the next level. But for your teenagers, the younger one, that's like the League of Legends and Dota 2. This is not, I pray, I never touched this thing, but I asked. That's why Tim and I are like, okay, I don't know what the gaming world, I don't play any games, but I asked my youth, what are they playing? They told me these two games is the most up to date. Last like since yesterday, this has like over 10,000 downloads every night, especially during the March break. And then there's like a Maple Story and also Call of Duty. Those are like, the Maple Story is for the younger kids, or like kids with a very childish mind. They're very fantasy. They have a dream world there. They just like SimCity in our day, but it is online. So I'd like to pass the time back to Tim, and we will do more Q&A on what today's world is later.
What was that game called? Dota? Dota 2?
No.
Dota?
Yeah.
Dota? Do you play Dota? No, but he knows what it is. Okay, sorry. Emma's going to be mad at me about it.
Yep.
So, what are you using nowadays? Am I talking about this? No, you talk about this, right?
Yeah.
Facebook, Twitter. Quick question. So a little confession time. As I heard a lot of laughter from some of you. How many of you are on Facebook? Yes, some of you. I'm not actually. So, how many of you are on Twitter? A few of you? Okay. As Pastor Jarrett was talking about, you know, things change. Things change very rapidly. I would say, and I do think that a lot of teens are much more on Twitter now. So if you want to connect with your teen, get on Twitter. I was thinking about, as part of the workshop, to have a little exercise of getting everyone to log on and create an account today. But I think that's part of it. If you don't understand the medium, you'll never understand what they're doing. Whether or not they'll let you follow them or not is a whole other issue. But if you don't understand the medium, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but it is a medium that is here. You know what? If I do this workshop next year, it'll probably change again. I do remember actually teaching about connecting with youth maybe 5 years ago. Not even that, a year long ago. With 2003?
No, 2006, sorry.
You know when I did this workshop? Thanks, Janet. And I remember specifically teaching parents and saying to them, if you have a hard time connecting with your youth, email them. If they won't talk to you at the dinner table, if they won't talk to you after dinner, email them. And a number of parents at the time, I remember talking to, they thought it was the most revolutionary idea because they've never thought about it. But they would give testimony of how all of a sudden they were having these email conversations with their teens, and much longer conversations than they've ever had before. I will never say that anymore, because your teenager probably doesn't email. They won't even check it. So forget all that, it's gonna change. So anyways, but right now, get on Twitter. Next year if I do this workshop, so if you record it, it's good, but the recording is gonna be useless for me, because it's gonna change next year. Okay, so next question. How many of you have a GPS in your car? Yes? How many of you, those of you who have your hands up, use the GPS? Yeah? A little bit, a lot? I love maps, like maps that I can draw on, open up, and use. But I specifically remember going on vacation one year, going to a new city, and thinking to myself, great, I have a GPS, I can use this. And driving around for about a week using the GPS. But by the end of the week, I thought to myself, I have no idea what this city really looks like. Because a reliance on the GPS means you don't really learn what the real world is about. What I try to illustrate with that is that there's really nothing wrong with the GPS. It's not intrinsically evil, it's not sinful by itself, but really, an over-reliance on any kind of technology can lead to bad outcomes. So, in the same way that GPS, sorry, where are we? Is a form of technology, pretty much any forms of these apps or programs or computers or iPads, they are simply a technology. They can be used for good and they can be used for bad. I remember teaching about, again, boundaries around internet and computer usage. Maybe it was 2006 again. And one recommendation I remember saying very practically to parents was, in terms of helping kids draw boundaries, is never have and allow them to have a computer in their room. And that was a huge rule for some parents, and it was almost too late because some parents were saying, well, every single one of our rooms has computers. But that's a rule that I kind of carry on into our household, and the computers can only be in common areas or in the kitchen or whatever it is. That rule, unfortunately, is out the window Because with iPads and iPhones and whatever, it doesn't matter. Because nothing will stay in one place. So that rule has to go out the window. So these mediums will constantly change, which means we have to constantly learn new rules for what's going on. Knowing, though, that they are neutral, we have to know that there are advantages and disadvantages to all of these mediums, especially social media. So with social networking, whatever it may be, whether it's Twitter or Tumblr or Snapchat or whatever it is, some of the advantages with these things is that it really does cross geographical boundaries and borders. I mean, Janet talked a little bit about connecting with friends across and overseas. And in a way, these kind of mediums, in a good way, you can connect with people that aren't just in your neighborhood for good. Connecting for us as a church, we pray for people overseas. We connect with individuals from our congregation who have gone on missions who are overseas, and we constantly are in connection with them. It actually does teach some young people social skills who have a really tough time communicating and tough time expressing themselves. So it can be good outlets for them to connect. As I talked about earlier, parents who learn to email their kids, I mean, whether it's email or another form, it is still a form of communication that can be developed and can be learned. Self-expression, you know, some people will think, and I still remember specifically, when I was in grade 11, and I did really well in computer science in grade 11, but my parents thought to themselves and said to me, because they really wanted me to be a doctor, and of course that wish failed as well, they said, you know, well, don't pursue computers, because, you know, where's that going to lead? Because they thought to themselves, it's just a computer thing, right? I mean, and now I always rub it in their faces, it's just a computer thing, right? But it really is a form of self-expression. And we often talk about self-expression being writing, or the arts, or music, or whatever it is. But really, a lot of these young people who have created web pages, sorry, even by me saying web page, I feel a little bit dated, because kids don't even create web pages anymore. We have a web page at our church, and the more I think about it, we should just cancel it, because no one looks at our web page anymore, except for the people who created it and the pastors, right? So, but they are incredible forms of self-expression, whether it is their Twitter page or whether it is their Facebook page for those young people who have it. It is a form of self-expression. I would even say with that, and we touched on it a little bit, but not completely, a lot of our young people use nicknames because they're allowed to create nicknames for themselves. And you know, on one hand, we think to ourselves, well, they're just making up an identity. They're not really their real name. But I would almost challenge you to ask them, why did they choose that name? If you're able to have a good conversation without yelling or screaming or whatever it is, because more likely than not, they put a lot of thought into that name, and that name represents something very meaningful for them. I'll give you an example. A name that I use online a lot, and this is my Twitter. So if you get on Twitter and you want to follow me, you can. That's okay. My first email address and that I continue to use is Phrygian Pastor. So Phrygian Pastor. And I don't mean that completely derogatory, although it is sort of funny. But if anyone ever asks me what Phrygian means, very few people actually ask what it means. But Phrygian is actually a modal scale on the piano. And it's my favorite scale, because music means a whole lot to me. So if anyone ever were to ask, you'd think, oh, it's just some silly name, and it's connected to pastor, and you know, maybe it's a Greek word for, you know, I don't know, some Bible character, but it's not. It's actually something that's very, very meaningful to me that I carry and continue to use as my Twitter address. It's not even an address, what's the word for it? Your Twitter handle, your handle. And more likely than not, our young people are using names. On some hand, you know, maybe if they're really young, it's just a silly name for maybe a game that they play. But for many of them, they use names, and if they're consistently using a name, it's probably something that's very, very meaningful for them. So this would be a great place for them to express themselves and to identify, maybe for something that they aspire to be. For me, I mean, I learned and started using Twitter really in this last year, I think, this last year or so. And what I found, as I tried and experimented with Twitter, I found that not just the name that I used, But the things that I was tweeting about, or the things that I was retweeting, weren't just things that I'm just a genius about. On one hand, they are things that I'm really interested in, but they're also things that I aspire to be. So if I were to share a little bit more about my own Twitter experience, the three things that I probably tweet about or retweet, or when I read other people's tweets and try to tell the world about, they are usually about music, cycling, and I would say philosophy and religion. Philosophy and religion. And by no means am I trying to say that I'm a master at all these three things. But on the other hand, really, these are the three things that I aspire to and the things that I admire. So in a way, if you, you know, tap into what your youth are looking at and reading or following themselves, it is their self-expression of telling you and telling the world what are the things that they aspire to be if they aren't already very much interested in them. I'll head over to disadvantages. So there are obviously disadvantages. You know, bullying can happen. And if you're not really sure about bullying, I guarantee you the schools, I mean, knowing from firsthand experience and knowing from my wife, bullying is a huge topic being talked about today. So in a way, I want you to look into it and understand it yourselves. But in another way, I want to kind of comfort you to know that schools are taking this very, very seriously in huge ways. And I'm sure you've seen commercials about bullying and cyberbullying and what that means. But this is a huge issue that can have negative consequences, but is very much being addressed in many of your schools and your kids' schools that are going on, that you're attending. Personal info with the wrong crowd. Definitely, I mean, kids are waking up to the fact that information that's being shared can be tapped into. I was reading or watching an article recently, and when the kids actually find out that marketing agencies can find and track their information, they actually are very, very interested in protecting their privacy. So as much as we think teens are dumb and they're careless with some of their information, once they wake up to it, they're actually very keen on protecting their privacy. They actually don't really want to tell the world every single thing about themselves. And they're actually smarter than we sometimes give them credit for. Further isolation, exclusion. So yes, on the other hand, some kids who are addicted to the screen and constantly want to be online, they do lose track, and there can be times when they kind of lose focus, as I shared about earlier about that young person who really lost track with virtual world and the real world. And sexting. If you don't know what sexting is, does anyone not know what sexting is? Do I need to get into this? Sexting is texting with their phones. Anything related to sex. It can be pretty graphic what some teens text each other, because to them, they think it's a very private and confidential conversation between them and maybe their boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever it may be, or hopefully not, somebody that they just met. Because they feel like it's something that's protected. So in a way, sometimes people can and would, there are studies about this, where teens actually will say things over text that they would never say in person. So they actually push boundaries. So this is a negative. They sometimes push boundaries that they themselves aren't sure that they would cross, but because they start sexting about it or texting it, then it helps them, it actually makes them loosen up some of the boundaries that they have. So that is something to be careful of. So recommendations, let's move on to things, practical things that we can talk about. You know, the number one thing that I would enforce, and I don't know the ages of your teens, you know, my oldest son is actually 9, so I'm really looking forward to when he turns into a teenager. I'll be coming to you guys and getting all your phone numbers and saying, what do I do now? Everything I told you, it was wrong, wasn't it? But to me, as I think about it, and because I've worked with youth for a number of years, I'm already foreseeing the fact that I need to lay the foundation now in terms of their character, in terms of teaching them to learn how to say no, in terms of teaching them to think for themselves. A parenting author by the name of Barbara Coloroso. I actually love the work that she does. I don't know if you've ever heard of her or not. Her big premise about teaching parents is to teach parents and teach their kids how to think. It's not necessarily telling them right and wrong, but as a parent, your number one job is to teach your child how to think. Her classic example is giving your children and giving your youth age-appropriate decisions. So, for example, my three-year-old daughter, who's very, very opinionated, actually, a good choice for her to practice would be, which pajamas do you want to wear? The red pajamas or the blue pajamas? And so at that age, it's a very appropriate choice that she can make, and she can live with the consequences. So she can wear the red one, and she knows the consequence is, well, I will be wearing the red pajamas tonight. Unfortunately, my daughter is also the kind of person who will go and change the pajamas later on in the middle of the night. I don't know how your daughters are, but, and maybe it's not just a gender thing. Anyways, I don't want to be biased. But that idea of constantly teaching your young people from an early age to make decisions and know what the consequences are. So as they grow older, giving them a choice, being okay with the fact that, you know, they may make choices that aren't so great. We practiced this with our oldest son when he was about 4 or 5 as well. Beyond just pajamas now, it was, what do you want to wear to church? Were you at church when this happened? And he decided to wear his Superman flotation swimming suit, which, you know, most of the body was skin tight, and the chest and the back had the flotation devices in it. And he was very proud to wear it because he really wanted to wear it. And we said, are you sure you want to wear this to church? And he said, yes. And so he wore it to church for the entire day. And he obviously got looks from every single person. And most of the Chinese congregation, you know, was ready to fire me. But I wanted to teach him to live with the consequences of the choices that he made. And, you know, we didn't embarrass him. We didn't, you know, make him feel bad or anything. And my wife packed a whole set of clothes just in case. But he actually wore it for the entire day. And for him, it was living and learning with those consequences. He's never worn that suit again, not even to go swimming. But he was able to learn the idea of choice. And I think with a lot of our young people, they are going to make mistakes. We have to live with that reality. But being able to help them learn how to think is probably more important than anything else. So helping them develop character, helping them to think for themselves. This second picture is a fence with a sheep around it, and it's teaching our kids boundaries. And this, again, I would say is something that we need to teach them at a young age and gradually teach them. So, you know, I gave that example earlier of telling parents to put all the computers not in only into common areas, but for some people it really was too late. You know, it's hard to say to an 18-year-old where their computer already was out, to move it out into the common area. And I imagine for some of your teenagers, bringing in a whole bunch of rules and boundaries would probably be very challenging, depending on the age that they're at. But hopefully, at young ages, if you're able to establish this, you can bring in and even negotiate with them. So for my sons now, they're 7 and 9, and they love the iPad, like most 7 and 9-year-olds, and they're really, at times, they're addicted to the iPad. So I sat them down one day, and I said, okay, look, you and me, and we need to negotiate what are logical boundaries. If I said to you, you just make it up on yourself, you'll play it 24/7, you won't go to school, and you'll just play it all the time, and they said, yes, we would. And so I said, okay, then what are good boundaries around it? And we negotiated different boundaries. So, you know, I'm not going to tell you what will work and what you should do for your teenagers or your young people. In our household, it is... there's no iPad playing during the weekdays, so Monday to Friday they can't play at all because they need to concentrate on school and the other things that they have. I know in some households, at the end of the night, iPads and iPhones are handed in. So when they go to bed at 9 or 10 or whatever, you know, they're free reign before that, but at a certain point they have to hand it in. Other families, I know, are very strict, and they turn off the Wi-Fi. I'm not going to say that's good or bad, but that's another boundary that sometimes happens. But it should be something that's negotiated. Hopefully it's not something that you just bring in and say, you must follow these rules and these are the boundaries. But they do need to learn to draw boundaries. This goes along the idea of developing character and teaching them to think. So if you teach them to draw boundaries for themselves, that is something that will go a long way as they develop. The next thing is just information, and what I mean by that really is that idea of all of us becoming continual learners. Again, whether we like it or not, the internet is here to stay, social media is somewhat here to stay, computers, iPads, technology is here to stay. And as difficult as it is for many of us to learn every single thing, and I don't think we need to learn every single thing, We do need to be on some sort of mission to learn what are our teenagers getting to. You know, this is why I brought Pastor Janet, because I wanted to be collaborative, to know that I'm not the master of all the technology that's out there. But as I continue to learn, and as I ask them, we too can learn exactly what's going on. I would say, for many of you, the best place to learn is probably just your teenager. Just say to them, hey, what do you and your friends do on your phone all day? You know, why are you staring at your screen? What is it? And have them teach you what they're doing. Maybe they're playing a game. If it is, and you think it's a waste of time, and it is a waste of time, waste some time with them. Play the game with them. Even 1 hour playing their game will actually go miles and miles in terms of building relationship with them. You will think it's a waste of time, and I guarantee it will be a waste of time, because it is a waste of time. I've played many of my children's games, and they're terrible games. I don't know why they play them. Like, they're just absolutely senseless. And I say to them, this is stupid. Like, show me another game. And then they'll show me another game. Oh, I like this one, and I'll play with them for an hour or whatever it is. And I know that games constantly change, and you can't keep up with every single one of them. But if you can connect on some level with something with them, I think that's huge. So it is if I can give you any kind of message, you do need to learn, and learn from your children if you can. I know some teens, they're probably at an age, some teens are at an age where they don't want to share with you at all, and they'll just say no. In that case, talk to people like Pastor Janet, or the other counselors or youth workers that are working in the church, or even talk to teachers at the school. I had a good conversation with my oldest son's teacher, and she found that all the kids in the class were playing a game called Minecraft. And I play this Minecraft, and I think it's, I don't understand why it's so fun. But as a teacher, she heard all the kids playing it, so she went home, downloaded the game, and she played it herself. And to me, that was a great lesson from the teacher, knowing that she's taking an interest for what the kids are doing. And so many of us can probably ask teachers in the schools and say, hey, what are the kids into? What are they not telling me? Are they all into Snapchat? Are they all into WhatsApp? You know, recently I downloaded WhatsApp. I don't understand why WhatsApp is popular yet. Maybe they're not. Maybe all our young people are not including me on purpose. I don't know. But you know, finding out what is the thing that they're into, and every teen will be different. So I can't say every single one of your teens is on one thing, because different schools will have different trends. I was reading an article about Facebook, and the reason why Facebook is actually on a downward trend, especially with young people, is because there was a little bit of it was more of a social pressure by young people, where they started hating on the fact that Facebook had a lot of ads. And so they didn't want ads, and they wanted things and apps that were more simple and less bombarded with advertisements. And so it was a social pressure from teenagers versus just a better product. The last thing that I want to say before I'll kind of open up the floor is to lead by example. So here's a good illustration of a boss versus a leader. And a boss basically stands there and just yells out, "What? Do this, do that, do this, do that," whereas a leader leads by example. And I don't know your lives, and I don't know what you do, you know, but we talked earlier about Facebook and how many of you are on Facebook as well. But I wonder, for how many of you, your kids or your teenagers or your children actually see you more like this most of the day than they see you doing anything else? And I know I'm guilty of it, so I'm not standing here saying that I'm perfect and you guys are all sinners, because I'm just as bad of a sinner. But we need to lead by example. So if our children see us on our phones all day long, and I don't know what you do on your phone, I don't even know what I do on the phone, but if they see us do this all day long, then they're just following our example. And we do need to know what does it mean to draw boundaries. I love that this season that we're in, I don't know what your church practices, but our church practices Lent. Lent is the season before Easter. And for our church, it became a real good conversation piece for our families to talk about, what are we Lenting? And you know, my son actually came home 2 weeks ago and said, "Dad, I'm Lenting meat." And I said, "No." because I said to him, because, well, first of all, you don't even cook. So who are you trying to suffer here? Are you trying to suffer me and mom or you? Like, what are you sacrificing? You're sacrificing your parents. You're not sacrificing yourself. So I kind of talked to him more, and I said, well, the day that you make your own lunches, then you can make a choice like that. But then I came at him, and I said, well, what does Lent mean to you? And he talked a little bit what a Sunday school teacher said, and I said, well, you know, here's more what Lent means to me. It's about giving up something for God as we approach Easter, just as Jesus gave up. So I didn't go into a big sermon about it, but, you know, I said, this is a practice that we do at our church. And so I gave him my example. I said, you know, I said to him, and he knows this, I really love watching the TV before I go to sleep. Just turning it on, I don't even know what's on. I just like the white noise, and maybe some of you are guilty about this too. And he knows it, so he, you know, every night he comes in, why do you get to watch TV? And I, you know, I have to sit here and, with my brother in bed, and he, you know, he's always kicking me. And I said, well, because you grow up, you'll figure it out later. And so I said to him, my Lent is drawing boundaries and not watching TV for the next 40 days at night. And he knows that this is my Lent. And I said, so what do you think is a good Lent for you? Something that actually is tough to do. And I suggested to him to give up Minecraft. And he almost came to tears when I said this, because this is how much he loved the game. So the first day I suggested, he almost cried. The second day we talked about it again. Hey, so what do you think about Minecraft? And he said, and he just shook his head. But I said to him, I can't make you give it up. This is your choice. Lent is not about me telling you what to do. But you know what I'm giving up. You know what mom is giving up. But what are you going to give up? And by, I think, the third day, he actually was very joyful telling people, I'm giving up Minecraft. I think actually he found another game to play. But but that's not the point. The point is that he went on this journey of figuring out what does it mean to draw boundaries and what does it mean to give up things for God. So, you know, I don't know what your churches do in terms of Lent seasons or different discussions around the church. But this is a good moment, as a teachable moment, to talk about things like that. What I want to do at this time is actually open the floor. We're a little earlier than we thought we'd go into the Q&A time. But, you know, I really didn't want to just stand here and tell you all the perfect ways. My children are not teenagers, and some of your children are older than mine, so I probably need to learn from you. But what I would love to do is open up the floor, and if you are a parent here who have a suggestion to answer, because I don't know if Jen and I even have perfect answers. We can tell you from our experience. But if you have more to add to some of the questions that are here, please, please feel free to share, because I do think this is a journey that we're all on together. Any questions? I'll open it up at this point.
So why is the power of the virtual world is sometimes getting stronger in the real world?
Why is the power of the virtual world almost more powerful than the real world? I'll take a stab at first. I think there are two ways around it. The first way, partially because I did do kinesiology, so I do have a little bit of a science background, I really do think that there's something physiological about it. The same reason why many of you, and myself included, are sometimes glued to the television. We can't turn it off sometimes. And my parents have a TV on in every room of their house, all day and all night long. And maybe it's just an elderly thing, but I don't think it's just an elderly thing. There is something actually physiological about screens and the way screens, the bit rate and your eyes, and your eyes will actually capture with it. And so you're actually, I won't get into details about it, but there is something physiological that happens. Yeah, dopamine and the chemicals that happen with that. And so there is something physiological. On the flip side, what I would say about teenagers, I'm still on the fence about whether or not their lives are more stressful than ours, because I think our life was pretty stressful when I was a teenager too. What I would say the common denominator is that at that age, and for many young people, it's some of the first chances they have at being autonomous, and some of the first chances that they have of creating an identity for themselves. And so that freedom at an age where there is confusion, and you know, when I do teach and talk a lot about adolescents, I mean, they're going through a tremendous amount of change, as many of us did, physiologically, emotionally, school is changing, their world is changing rapidly, not maybe more than what we're experiencing, but rapidly so much more from their perspective. So from their perspective, everything is changing, and the one thing that they can create and control is the virtual world. And so that's why creating apps that are free, creating an email address that's free, is so attractive, because they can have so much control over it in a time when they feel a little bit like the world is out of control. I don't know if it objectively is out of control, but that's how they feel. Does anyone have anything to add to that? Yeah?
Do
people, maybe they cannot find the, like the they are not very successful academically or other, they don't have other hobbies, then they don't feel so much victory. But in the virtual world, because they can keep upgrading, if they keep practicing, they can always improve. It's a little bit easier to get a victory kind of psychologically. Is that part of the reason?
I'm not going to say no. I think it could be. I would say, though, that I do know a lot of young people who are successful, who are smart, and find themselves addicted as well. So, you know, and addiction then, you know, especially addiction, pure addiction, I mean, is obviously a huger topic beyond even just the internet addiction, right? Whether it's addiction to drugs or addiction to anything. Kids actually can be addicted to sports. They can be addicted to certain relationships. What I would say along those lines would be there probably is a pre-existing condition, whether it's a mental condition or an underlying relational issue. The other thing that I would say is common for all teens is that they are hungering for connection. They're hungering very, very badly for connection. You know, so for a lot of parents I hear, they say, well, my kids don't want to talk to me. They actually do want to talk to you. They don't want to be lectured at. That's the difference. They actually want to talk to older people. You know, in our church right now, we do have a lot of 25 to 40 something generation in our English congregation. And what I feel like I have to keep reminding this age group is people are already looking up to you. You just need to accept it. And the young people are already there looking up to them. And they're hungering for relationship. They're hungering for people to speak into their lives. It's just, how are we connecting with them? I do find then they're at this age, because of that deep hunger, they then turn to things that are easy, whether it's the internet, whether it's alcohol, whether it's things that are not so great for them. For some young people, they do turn to amazing things. And I wouldn't say that they're all bad and they're all evil and addictively bad, but they are hungry for connection, and that is a common denominator for all young people.
Video that we saw actually is the opposite of what we discussed. What they're telling us is people are more involved in social media, but actually more people are being lonely. I think the reason why they give that comment is, yes, we can have a lot of friends, we can tweet a lot, we have a lot of followers, but we may end up pretending we are the one that is the most attractive one. The person that you want to follow, so they sort of made up their own identity in a way, but it's not reviewing their own self. So
right.
People are getting more lonely than they actually.
This was a work seminar, right? Yeah, it's interesting watching some of the media talk about it, and you really need to think about what age groups they're talking about. I agree, and I for a long time, my personal criticism of Facebook. And I'm not a Facebook user, so you can throw stuff at me later on, was that I felt like people were just posting things on Facebook because they wish they were this. They wish they were always partying with their friends. They were always having get-togethers. And so everything they posted were these happy celebrations, when really they probably weren't that happy inside, and became this image that they were portraying over and over again. And that becomes cyclical, because the more you portray something that you're not, it actually makes you more and more lonely, and makes you actually more and more disconnected, because if anything, it reveals to you how much not you are what you want to be. So in many cases, yes. For young people today, what's kind of interesting, I was reading this and I find it true, is that they do connect with many of their friends, like WhatsApp, or is Snapchat, is that a locked thing too? It's not locked. Is that locked? At least WhatsApp. It's not something that's just public, like Twitter. So it actually locks in the friends that you want to lock into. And I was reading a really neat article, because it was talking about how young people are even more protective of their privacy than ever before. So again, the generations are changing a little bit, where the people that they're messaging are only the people they know. So there, although there are places like Facebook or other public domains that people are meeting things and going down wrong avenues, there are actually a lot of avenues, more and more, especially young people today, where they're only talking to people that they know, which is good and bad. I'm not sure where we're going to end up with that, but in cases like that, it seems like they're becoming more and more exclusive, which I'm not sure what to say about that.
I actually had a conversation with my son.
Yeah, okay.
After that workshop, and mm-hmm. he's like, Mom, how can I be lonely when I have some friends that I talk to every day?
Right.
So I said, well, if it's real friends that you actually see them, or like you know them,
right.
then yeah, it's an enhanced environment
right.
for socializing and understanding better of each other. But if it's not the case, then it may or may not be the right thing to do. But it was interesting.
Yeah, and it's great that you had that conversation, even just to, you know, yeah. And I would say, you know, whenever we read things, almost bring it to our kids and say, what do you think about this? Do you think it's garbage or not? Like, because they may have a completely different view, but at least you're talking about it, which is better than not at all.
Obviously, that can only go on computers. Again, like the iPad and all that stuff, you know, iPod, you can't really do it with those things. But would that still be something for younger kids?
Yes, yeah. And actually, on your iPad, there are restrictions that you can set up. There are parental controls. So, yeah, pretty much most companies are pretty aware of the fact that these are big problems.
Mm-hmm.
So there are restrictions that you can put on, even on your PlayStation that your kids, do your kids even play PlayStation anymore? I don't know, maybe not. I'm so old, now I'm feeling so old. But yeah, most technologies do have some sort of parental controls that you can put on. With a little bit of research, you should be able to figure it out. But I would say most media have something, whether it's a program or something that's already built into it.
I think you can get a good browser to do that.
Yeah, yeah, with its own firewall or whatever, some sort of restriction that you can. Yeah, yeah. So for some of you who are a little bit more technology
mm-hmm.
and you understand your routers, another seminar about what a router is. For some people, because I'm sure some people don't know what a router is. Yeah.
It's better to leave it open and try to build it internally. They can self-control. Because now I can do that, but when they are older, if they really addict to it, they can go to the library. They don't go home.
Yeah. Or they can go to Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly.
They can go anywhere. They can go to school. They can go to church. This church has hot coffee.
Yeah.
So
she just emphasized that to do more effort and to help them to feel their
I think 12 really is that borderline age. I think anything under 12, not anything under 12, but most kids under 12, you are more able to put restrictions and give more limitations on. You know, one, I remember our kids, you know, we showed them some YouTube videos just because we thought they were good and they would enjoy them. But then a real realization as they were searching themselves of how dangerous it can be without us standing there with them, because there's so many things on YouTube really that are not appropriate for kids under 12. And so you really need to put limitations on that. But you're right, after 12, if they're already online, you then become just the boss, shouting commands by putting restrictions on, by putting things on the router. There really will be a day and age when routers are almost useless too, because everyone has data, right? I think I'm the last person on earth that doesn't have data. I don't have data on my phone. But everywhere you go, there's a signal somewhere, or they have data, and sometimes data is faster than most people's home router too. So teaching your kids to think is better than anything else.
And I think the self-control is really very difficult. Not only we have really good relationship with each other before we come to Canada. But we came to Canada only 1 year, and come here only several weeks. Yeah, we have a classmate to teach him how to play the computer game. So from then on, sometimes he really cannot control himself. You know, he's a big boy. So I also want to give him freedom. I don't want to, you know, dictate him or control him. Yeah. Sometimes maybe he's using the computer for homework. Sometimes just to watch the movie, and sometimes he check the information. Yeah. I don't think he spends much time only on the computer games, but sometimes really he couldn't control himself. Several times I just want to give him freedom and let him just stop by himself, but finally failed. So. How can I do? Do I need to control him, stop him, or just let him control by himself? It's really, really disturbing. Yeah, it's frustrating. Yeah, for me. You know, sometimes he's playing the computer game with the team. You know, he cannot stop. He told me, "Okay, mom, I'll stop at maybe 6:30." Usually we have dinner at 6:30, but till 6:30 he cannot stop because it's a teamwork.
He's learning teamwork. it's a life skill.
So he said if I stop, his friends will blame you. Yeah. So I don't know how to, you know, I really want to have very good relationship with my son, you know, my husband in Canada, you know, so only he and me stay in Canada. Always because of this computer game, make me feel headache, so painful.
Right. Jan, do you want to take this? Knowing that her son is here in the room as well. Just putting that out at this point.
I just want to say it's like the positive peer pressure. Trying to find some peer groups that they can go with and they can possibly influence them. My youth group, I would say I'm very proud of my youth group. They have a box. I didn't ask them for it, but they have a box to fill it out, to put all the things that distract them during youth group.
So they collect
it? They collect it and put it in during youth group. Like for my younger group, the younger youth, I would say I'm trying to impose on them. But as a parent for junior high, I would say because they are still young to have a phone or like a smartphone, especially in a church setting, they don't know what is right and what is wrong, and they don't know how to stop. I say, parents, please help your Sunday school teachers, help your pastor. Don't give them a phone. You can locate them anywhere in the church. It's not like every church is not like this church that big, I would say. You don't need a phone to locate them. If they are at church, they don't need a phone. They can just give it to you, and then after church, you give it back to them. To help the Sunday school teachers, and you talk to your Sunday school teachers and the youth counselors. That what they are into is something that they really enjoy. So they listen to the counselors more than the youth pastor or more than you. But if the youth counselors able to give them very positive influence of setting boundaries, setting the time limit. Like one of my youth counselors, he is like into games. I would say always on his iPad, always into iPad playing games. Games that the kids is playing. First of all, he wants to know what the kids
pray. Second thing is that it's a medium that they can talk, but he set a very good boundary to them. No games, nothing during the fellowship time, during whoever is talking. Like, even I'm making an announcement, he said no games at any time. So I think positive influence and peer pressure, like positive peer pressure, is very important for teenagers, especially when they are too young. And for those, I would like to address that for people who just come here for 1 or 2 years, they are trying to establish their friendship because they don't have any friends here. They really want to expand their friendship circle. It's a time that they build their confidence and they build their relationship. But how, as a parent, as a youth worker, can help is to know their parents. Know the parents of your teenagers. Know each other. If at school, I would say, there's like a lot of parents council or parents group that you can talk to your each other. Get to know them and get invite them to come to your house, or like if your house is not really comfortable for them to hang out, or just bring them out to McDonald's or Tim Hortons, give them share with them, give them like a hot chocolate or something. The youngest one, they will like you, and they will able to share what their world is like. They won't hide in their little world.
Did you have somebody over here? Did you want to share something?
I was interested to see someone comment regarding the
monster. we were seeing if the son wanted to make a comment. You don't have to. It's up to you. Thanks for sharing, and I hope you don't mind us talking. But, you know, I think he touched on a bunch of different things. You know, one thing that we didn't really talk about is that I would think that, and I do see it in my own kids too, that at times they want to play simply because they're bored. They're actually not just addicted, but, you know, my son, March break hit, and every morning it's a pain to get my son to get up for school. But the first day of March break, and he got up at 6:30, and he wanted to play iPad. And I said, "What are you doing? I'm go back to sleep. Daddy's going back to sleep. Why are you waking me up?" But you know, he was excited. It was March break, and he was a little bit bored. He woke up early, and the first thing I thought of was, "How can I fill my time? And what is quick and easy?" Actually, as Canadians, it's actually worse. Like, I know my kids in the summer, at any moment they would love to go outside to play. They would love to get on their bikes and just ride. For like hours on end, but unfortunately in the winter they're more bored because they can't go outside as much, and especially when it gets super freezing they can't go out, but many times they're actually just bored, and that's why they turn to something that's quick and easy to entertain them, which before the internet was the TV, and we talked a lot about TV addiction before. Why? Because TV is so easy to turn on and flip channels. You know, it's funny in our household, and I don't mean we're such a perfect household, but we got rid of cable. So we have just an antenna, which means we have about three and a half channels or something, and one of them is French, right? So my kids don't love watching TV at home, but they love going to Yaya's house because Yaya has like satellite 300, 400 channels, right? But for them, they won't turn to it because they know it's not there. So it's not something that they would turn to, but the iPad is. So that's something that we're learning together too. Yep.
Thank you.
As I think about that, as I hear what you're saying, I mean, if it wasn't the internet, if it wasn't social media, if it wasn't these things that we talk about, it'd be something else. You know, young people with a lack of direction, it's not just this generation, it was our generation. You know, we know lots of people, I'm not going to say you, but many of our friends who, same thing, at this age, at that age, had lack of direction, had a lack of goals, were bored, were addicted to different things. So it is sort of a generation thing in terms of them finding their own life and finding their own, you know, mission. That God's created them to be. I agree with that. You know, if I can give any kind of last word, it would be, you know, be patient with your young people. For many of them, it is something has to click at a certain point. You know, I don't want to generalize too much, but as I've worked with youth, boys and girls are different too. I don't want to be too general, but especially with boys, I find somewhere between grade 9 and 11, something happens. That's all I'll say. I don't know what it is, and I don't know enough about neural biology to know. I did do some neuroscience, but something happens between grade 9 and 11 where they just change, and they figure out who they are, or they figure out a direction in life, or they figure out girls. I'm not sure which one it is. It's one of those. I would say, as a last remark, though, I mean, the internet is just a medium. And hopefully it is something that we can not just lead by example in terms of addiction and putting boundaries on it, but also showing them the usefulness of it. So, you know, what I love about some of our young people is that they use the internet to find out about world events that they're interested and passionate about. So just today, a teen was retweeting or tweeting about events going on in Libya, because for her, this matters. And I think the internet can be a tool for many of them to express themselves and to express the things that they're passionate about, whether they're social issues or social justice issues that they are concerned about. They want to retweet because they want other people to pray about and other people to be concerned about poverty, unemployment, things that they actually are interested in. So I think as parents, we can be role models in that way as well, to show them, hey, these are the useful ways that the internet can be used, useful ways that the iPad can be used, useful ways that computers can be used, not just for, not that games are bad, but not just for things that are addictive, but things that can also benefit them and find purpose in life.
I agree with you in the sense that, you know, it comes down to character and teaching the child passion directed in the right way. And if it's not for this addiction, it would be another addiction. Like, you know, I think this addiction is just a little more prevalent than a drug or an alcohol addiction.
Agreed.
Back
yeah.
in our day.
Yeah.
I think just because it's more available and it's just easier to tap into, whereas it's not that easy to get into drugs or alcohol, right? And although TV can be addictive, TV addiction I don't see as bad as this kind of addiction where people are into gaming and all other negative, like you don't bully on TV, you can bully on this.
Right.
So I think there's a lot more negative to this type of addiction
yeah.
than there was the type in our generation. And so we do have to be more careful.
Yeah.
And I think it's a spiritual battle.
Yeah.
That's what it really boils down to.
I agree.
I just pulling up on that, when could you as a gender kind of speak on whether you see any correlation between the teen's addiction and usage of the social media and internet going along with how good their relationship with their parents or how spiritually mature they are? As you kind of see any correlation to that at all?
With the parents, I would say
so I just put one for the girls on the table. The question is like whether how we related to the spiritual and how
if you see correlation.
Correlationship between the social media and the spiritual world. I would say one of my girls, she is really into Tumblr's YouTube searching, but she is my youth group leader. She used all the mediums to search for materials to teach each other on the topic. Like last week we were on studying the love, and she helped us to search some talk that is about love in Christians in spirituality. So this is more like positive way that the youth and the parents can help them to learn as well. Maybe you can ask your kids to help you to do some research on your Sunday school preparations too, because they this is available on most many things. But of course, you have to be critical. Yes, right, whether it is right or wrong, you have to make sure. But it is there some positive in the medium in the social media. It's, as what Tim already said, GPS, like it's just a medium, it's a tool that we use. Whether we teach them the right way to use it, it's a matter of how we teach our young adults, young kids. And one more point is, as Tim said, the boys is grade 10 to grade 11, they are changing a lot. I would say they are changing a lot even they are in grade 12. Sorry to say, the school board is quite messed up this day because we don't have grade 13. They haven't grown into maturity to know what they really want. I have two boys who is now 18 and 19, and in my youth group, they don't know what they want to do until this year. They are repeating their grade 12 years. They learn, they know what they want for the future. Give your kids some time to develop, especially boy. I would say sorry for who. Not all the boys, because like one of my teenagers, like grade 10, when he was grade 10 or like younger, I see him from grade 9, grade 8 to grade 10. He's the most rebellious kid in the church. He ran away from every teachers. He hide in every corner, any corners. But when he reached grade 11, if there is one adult that he can talk to, he can share his story, his life, and anywhere in school, he would come to you. Open up that area for them. That boy come to my office every Friday, right after school, just hang out with me. They were playing games. They might be on the internet. I let them do it. They sometimes talk to me, sometimes share what their day is. Sometimes I just let them do whatever they want in their free time. I give them room to grow. That's one thing that I really want for us to learn. For girls, they mature younger, many of them. Like grade 10, they probably know what they really want, but they still need our protections. For girls, I would say a lot of young girls, they are so influenced by the media in how to be beauty. They have like all this makeup and clothing that I guess not any of the ladies here would wear when we were teenagers. But they are in the trend that they want. How can we as adults teach them is to model what we wrote in the day basis. Like see, it's like my clothing is like back in the 10-15 years ago. Then I still wear it, but I say I don't really need those clothing myself to build my confidence. Help your girls to build the confidence in the world in this area. It's very important.
I think we have one more hand. I don't want to ignore. There was one here.
Have and will be well equipped. But I think it's really beneficial really to hear from the teenagers' voice what really they're thinking, what they're really struggling. You know, just to hear that boy, I think it's really opened up my eyes to see. And he just came and landed a year ago, but he was still bored, he still struggled, you know, even probably with studying the language. But he swept through that kind of a struggle, challenge, you know, by dealing with how to build up his connection. And sometimes we do not really understand what they struggle through. And we just want to try to fight this computer screen. It's like an enemy. But sometimes it's not. We do not listen. That's why they don't want to talk. Because we do not understand them. Their struggle, their challenge, their stress. And because we didn't come from the same generation. I think if we come here always want to see if there's anything we can tackle, find a technique so we can fight this battle. And we can never win them. Because we are not, our heart is not for them. And we don't want to listen, we don't want to understand them. You know, I'm very proud of you, the boy, I don't know your name. Because you came and only like a couple of years, and you come to learn your journey and to learn how to do that.
You're one year.
I have my daughter, she will not sit here with me to listen to this. And you came. So I think we have to give some credit. And I start to change our mindset. To understand them and understand their heart struggle. Before we have anything to say that how to change them, this is I want to say, yeah.
I really agree with this madam, what she said. And really beautiful tonight.
Thank you. Well, thank you for coming. We need to close. I think Pastor Janet and I will be here a little bit longer, so if you do want to ask any more questions, we'll try to answer. I definitely don't want to portray that we're experts, but I agree with so many things that you guys have said yourselves. I mean, for us to learn to listen, for us to learn to understand, I still don't think kids are more or less stressed than we are or whatever it be, but it's different. It's a different kind of stress. It's a different time. And there's different struggles that we may or may not understand, but we need to learn to understand more and more. But thank you for coming tonight.